Hello, I'm Jonathan Reams, as he said, and I work for Columbia University IT. And this is a talk on extensible monitoring with Nagios and messaging middleware. So this project started out as we needed to replace our now 12-year-old legacy monitoring system that we wrote ourselves 12 years ago, and nobody knows how it works. It's very customized, very over-engineered, and support doesn't exist. And it had about 17,000 checks, and we had a mandate from management to move to Nagios. So, I go and I download Nagios and I install it and I port our checks over and I go out for coffee and I come back and it isn't working. Latency is high, there's high load, so we're having some problems. So how do you talk to Nagios? Like, how does your monitoring data get to you as a sysadmin? So there are N check processes with N check reaper processes that read the result back, that write to N check result files that are periodically read in by a central scheduler, which then periodically writes that out to a status data file, which is then read in by some CGIs, which turns it into HTML, which gets sent to you. So there's a lot of reading. So what are some problems? All of that is trapped on one host. Like, it's the check results, the status data, the configuration data, they're all files, they're all on the file system, and if you are not on that file system, then you don't have access to them. It's also not really a great executor. Everything is basically synchronous. It's asynchronous in that it forks and then it reads back from a pipe, but that means you have two processes, one for reading, one for writing, for every check that you run. And the data format is really simple, but it isn't a standard. You can figure it out, but there isn't something you can just say, like, import Nagios parser. It's written completely in C, so if you want to make any big changes to it, now you're running something that has a patch, and you're going to have to support that. And it can be a little I/O bound because, again, everything's on the file system. So, you know, there are ways to mitigate that, but you're on the file system. You are dependent on your disk and your file system to be awesome, or it won't be awesome. And you can't query data just kind of ad hoc. The CGIs, when you run any of them, when you do anything, it reads in all the status data, parses it, it actually duplicates it, it doesn't deduplicate it, and then prints it out to you. And they're just sorted alphabetically, so there isn't, you know, you can't really guess, it's not indexed. And then input into it is via a FIFO that has certain limitations, like a buffer, and it doesn't send anything back to you. So you just have to hope that your commands stick. So in summary, communication is pretty hard. Like, it for a program that communicates with you, it's kind of complicated. So my solution to this is a project called NagemQ, which is a Nagios event broker plugin that implements a ZeroMQ-based API for Nagios. So a little background on ZeroMQ. It's a brokerless messaging kernel in a single library. It emulates a Berkeley socket API. So if you know how to work with sockets, you know how to work with ZeroMQ. It supports IPC, it supports TCP, multicast, and a number of messaging patterns. It's all asynchronous after connections are established, so your application doesn't worry about actually talking to things. And it has bindings for pretty much everything. And it doesn't care about what you're sending. It's just a blob. It just gets it there quickly. So, NagemQ is an event broker plugin. It exposes three interfaces into Nagios. There's an event publisher, there's a state query, and then there's a command socket. The host publisher, basically, as events happen in Nagios, this is a host check that result that's been processed and is now going to be put into the active state. It builds out a JSON object of whatever the event is with a prefix of the type of message and what object it's referring to. In your application, you can subscribe to these. So if you were just, you know, all you wanted to see was host check results, you could subscribe to host check processed, and that's all you would get. The command socket receives JSON objects that encapsulate commands. And then the state request receives a query and sends back an array of objects that represent Nagios data. So now we have this interface in Nagios, and what can you do with it? Well, you can. We have sort of three examples that are a few of which we have in production and a few of which are still kind of young. But the first one is distributed check execution. Then we have custom user interfaces and high availability. So MQExec is our distributed check executor. It is completely asynchronous. It listens to the beginning of host and service check and event handlers, runs whatever the command line is, and then sends it back into Nagios via the command socket. You can filter what commands it will execute based on any part of the message that describes the start of the check. So if you had all checks that were to be run remote called check underscore remote as the command name, you could filter based on that. You can filter based on host name. And that's so that you can run this at the edge. It's designed to be run both as a pool of workers on your monitoring host and also at the edge as a NRPE replacement. And in both cases, it just sends the check results back. And you can have it so that they're receiving commands at the edge and executing them without Nagios having to do anything. Never forking, never doing anything, just sending metadata out. So we did a, this is a test. This is sort of test data that we did just for this presentation. It is Nagios configured with 20,000 service checks across 2,000 hosts with a little dummy check script that just busy waits and returns a problem about 10% of the time, just to, you know, force some latency, force some more code paths to go. And this is over 20 minutes. This is how just plain old .nagios worked. After 20 minutes, about 15 seconds of check latency. And this is how MQExec performed with the same setup. In fact, this is just one line of configuration in nagios.cfg, just loading the event broker up. So that's pretty great. The other thing that we're using it for during our migration project, people were not happy about having to use the web interface of Nagios. They really wanted a command line. So we wrote them one, and it looks like this. It looks like a command line. This is very much in development and is not production quality yet, but we wrote a Python, JavaScript, Twitter Bootstrap, Ajax, Web 2.7 awesome API that I'm going to show you real quick, just because I think it looks pretty cool. I can get my thing to, yeah. And here it is. So this is using Python to actually pull the data out of Nagios over the state request module. And the Python CGIs that drive this do basically nothing. Like right now the return codes are numeric and it turns them into text, so it says down instead of one. But other than that, that's pretty much all this does. And for each, like if I go and I click on disk at Amaranth, there's another script that goes and just requests enough data to show you the status of or an admin on this random Oracle server. So there you go. And that's our, hold on, if I can figure out how to get back to my presentation. There we go. And then finally, we wrote sort of a fun interface to Twitter. Its usefulness is questionable, but it's kind of fun to see the 6,000 tweets of all of our problems. The other issue that often comes up when you're deploying Nagios, because it's trapped on one host, how do you make it highly available? Well, the answer is you do it yourself, and the other answer is there are many ways to do it. You can use something called the Obsessive Compulsive Service Processor Handler, which will then fork an exec, something that sends all your check results over to a secondary host. You can, you know, rsync over your retention data, which has your comments, but then the failover time of cover RTO is only however long your rsync period is. So you lose stuff, and then the secondary host has to have some extra configs to know how to check the primary host to see if it's up. And then, you know, actually fencing the failover is, well, it's to be defined. So, but with NagMQ, because you have this event publisher, which tells the other host or anyone or anything all the events that happen as they happen, you can just send them over to another host, and it can be passive. There's a special program status message that fires every 5 seconds that you can use as a heartbeat. There is a special interface for just loading up a bulk state at startup to bring a newly passive node in line with whichever node is active. And you can also use MQExec on both the active node and the passive node, sending and working for whichever one is active, so you aren't wasting a host just sitting there waiting for the other one to die. It can actually be doing useful work. And, you know, then just use VIFs and things to redirect traffic. So, like, we have a pretty good interface now, but Nagios is a well-defined product, and it has a big community, and it has a lot of add-ons, and I like some of the add-ons, so why shouldn't you use one of these? Live status, MK Live status is actually very similar to like what my state request module does. And ModGearMan is a pretty good check executor too, and you know, why should you use this project? Well, it's not really a product, it's an API. So it comes with some examples, but all of the little examples and the demos that I've done are meant to be examples of what you can do. It's about making communication with your monitoring system easy. It's about you should have one interface and it should just work, and communication with it should just work, and you should just be able to consume that data, and you shouldn't have to know anything about, you know, what is the format of the status.dat? Should I memory map this file? I don't know, it's 40 megabytes. And you can implement all these tools for your that talk to your monitoring system without having to write any compiled code. You don't have to load up a new event broker every time you need to just get a little bit of status data out into a database somewhere. And you can do expensive data processing without driving up latency, because you're letting ZeroMQ take care of talking to all the clients. And so future work, because it's not perfect, it's just pretty good. Pluggable authentication and encryption. Right now, this is kind of one of the weaknesses of ZeroMQ a little bit, is that it doesn't do, it is as secure as you are. So it is a socket, and if you make your socket secure, it will be secure. But right now NagMQ is not secure. If you can talk to it and it will dutifully give you whatever you want. I'd also like a pluggable parser and emitter. Right now we're using JSON just because it's widely available, but not everyone likes that. I am currently working on a NDO Utils database replacement, which, if you don't know, it's a project that basically shoves all your Nagios data into a MySQL database. So I'm working on replacing that with some SQL Alchemy magic. And then more user interfaces, always SMS, email, REST, should be able to easy to talk to it. And sort of the big elephant in the room is Nagios 4, which is well under development and which is totally different from Nagios 3 in that it's much more about of a message passing application between a pool of workers and a single controller. And so making NAGMQ both still relevant and, you know, integrating it with that will be kind of a challenge. I think I'd do it better than Nagios 4, but that's because I'm me. And that is NAGMQ, available on GitHub, released under Apache 2. And I'll be happy to take any questions. Oh, wow, we do. I went through that very quickly. I'm sorry.
Anybody? No hands? No hands? Hands? Wow, okay. So I have a question. So far, what have you seen as pain points in your current implementation? Yeah, I mean, in terms of things that problems that have cropped up that you that you didn't foresee or that you don't think will be very easy to fix.
I'd say that the thing that I've learned is that the project has grown rather organically. Like, it started out as just an event publisher, and then. Like, I wanted to do more, so I added the command interface to receive commands, and then I wanted to do more, and I added the state interface, and I've sort of slowly, as applications need them, added more and more data that you can get out of the system. I'm pretty close to the point where I have almost all the data available. But I think there are parts that, especially like getting state data, like the way the querying works, could probably be refactored a little bit. But as it's developed organically this way, it's been there haven't been very many pain points, because if there are, I just fix them. So. Yes. So internally, the actual code of NAGMQ is not very, like, they're basically functions that just add tons and tons and tons of key value pairs to whatever object is being built out. And the maintenance that I've had to do so far is I'll be working with some data and I'll realize that that's actually a Boolean. And right now it's being represented numerically. And so I need to go in and switch out that function call from add new number to add new Boolean. The code that actually does like building the objects out is already pretty separated out. And it's a very modular system. So maintaining it like in terms of adding new things to it isn't that complicated. I should have said this earlier, all the interfaces are optional. So if all you want is an event publisher, you can just leave the other parts disabled and that's all it will do. And if all you want is state request, then you can enable that and that's all it will do. As you add more to it, it will try to make itself perform better. So like as you add more like command and state requests run in their own threads, And as you add more threads, it will change how it adds check results so that they'll be quicker. pain points that I found in developing it is just that Nagios is not, so it's not thread safe at all. Like, it's one big thread, and the objects are just big structs, and you request them, or you use, now in Nagios 4, they're switching to like a hash, but it was a skip list, and you get this object, and you just have no idea when it's going to change. For a while, NagMQ was just not thread safe, and I was very lucky that I just wasn't seg faulting all over the place. I've since found a way to kind of hack in thread safety at the expense of very short performance. But so that's a pain point, but it's one that's kind of complicated to fix. And there have been a few other places just where working with the Nagios code, like the Nagios code kind of assumes that it's the only thing that's looking at its data, except that it gives you this API to hook into it, which has full access to all the data. And so then, unless all you're doing is sitting in the event loop and you're safe because you're in a callback and nothing else is running, it's kind of a zoo. So that's a pain point. Anyway. You git clone and auto reconf dash I and it can make install. You do need the 0MQ libraries installed, but it comes with its other dependencies. You comment out the broker line in the config. It is very much designed so loading it, like if you don't load it, then Nagios just goes back to doing everything the way it works by itself. It doesn't change anything about what's in Nagios. So. How many checks per second? Well, right now we're in production. We have it's checking about 1,200 hosts, 1,100 hosts with about 13,000 service checks across two monitoring hosts. And we check every host every 2 minutes, and we check every service. The maximum service interval is 10 minutes, but we're routinely doing at least 1,000 service checks and 1,000 host checks a minute.
You think you can handle like
30,000 host checks? I sure hope so. The test that we did in the graph here was 20,000 service checks across 2,000 hosts, and that was on one single VM. So it was the test harness with like two CPUs, and we had, you know, service and host latency. The average was about a half second, which isn't bad. So.
Any other questions? Thank our speaker, John. One more. I assume you could use it to replace collectors that cross different data centers without much trouble.
Collectors in.
Not data centers.
Yes, I mean. Yes, that is very much what it's kind of designed to do. One of the sort of the nice things again is 0MQ really lets you make all those connections just a matter of configuration. So it, like, the project actually comes with a little broker, but it's totally optional. So if you just want something to just like subscribe to events on the local host to like shove them into a database, that's fine. You don't need a broker. If you won't need like brokers on every host that do complicated, you know, turning publish into pushes and all that kind of stuff, go ahead. But yeah.